Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. A frequent criticism of the ID movement is that there are no peer-reviewed publications dealing with ID. The Discovery Institute has pointed out that more than 50 such papers have now been reviewed and published, but if history is any guide, that criticism will linger. Despite the growing number of peer-reviewed papers related to the ID movement, it's also important to ask if publication is essential to good science. The Discovery Institute's Casey Luskin recently pointed out that many prominent theories were published in other forms first. But there is another issue that needs to be explored regarding refereed journals. Do they ensure quality or enforce orthodoxy? That question is also the title of a paper written by Dr. Frank Tipler, professor of mathematical physics at Tulane University, who joins us now. How is it that refereed journals, that peer-reviewed publications, how is it that they enforce orthodoxy instead of ensuring quality?
Well, the nature of refereed journals has changed in my lifetime, in my career, which goes back, 40 years. It used to be the only point of refereeing a journal is to make sure that no egregious errors or crackpot papers appeared in the journals. The major journals were just communication media. Now, increasingly, you cannot even get an idea considered unless it first appears in a referee journal. Now, that changes the situation enormously because now it gives enormous motivation for people who are opposed to a particular viewpoint from making sure that the opposing viewpoint never appears in the referee journals. Then they can dismiss the idea by simply saying, I don't have to address that idea. It's not appeared in the referee journals. Now, I've looked at the history of the referee journals, and people in the past, physicists, that's what I am, so I'm very interested in the history of the referee journals in physics. People in the early part of the 20th century basically would submit their papers to the leading physics journals, and unless they were complete nonsense and obvious nonsense, they would just then be published. For example, an obscure patent office official by the name of Albert Einstein, who in 1905, no one had ever heard of, submitted a series of extraordinary papers to Annalen der Physik, the leading German physics journal, and they were published immediately. Now, that would not happen. Now, if an obscure patent clerk happened to submit a paper of equal brilliance to the referee journals, they would almost certainly be rejected. Good example of that is Albert Einstein in the 1930s submitted a paper on relativity theory, his own theory, to the leading American physics journal, which is Physical Review, and they rejected it. Albert Einstein, needless to say, was incensed, and he wrote back a letter saying never again would he submit a paper to this particular journal. Now, I myself have learned, I am an expert in relativity theory. That's my area of my PhD thesis, and that's what most of my papers are written in. I have also published two papers on the particular area of relativity theory that Albert Einstein submitted to that journal. And I think that Albert Einstein actually had a point in that particular paper. The problem is that referees were able to shut Albert Einstein's opinions out of the journals. And even today, we don't know what Albert Einstein's full argument for his particular point was. I myself would like to see it because I've learned that even when Albert Einstein is wrong on a question of physics, he's often right. That is, he has the basic right idea, but he does not have the mathematical background to establish his idea.
How is it the nature of these journals changed over time?
Well, part of the reason is there has been a huge increase in the number of physicists, scientists generally in the world, which means that most of the papers written today are in fact nonsense. So the leading journals, to prevent the amount of nonsense that they publish, started to censor the individual papers. That is one of the basic causes. But Once you create a sensor mechanism, even for the best of intentions, you can rest assured it will be used with intentionally bad ideas, which is restricting new ideas from appearing in physics. Because any important new idea, by definition, has to oppose the prevailing view amongst the individual scientists. And so the scientists who are asked to referee this idea would automatically reject it. One of Albert Einstein's great achievements is his, of course, everyone knows his theory of relativity. One of the things it did was to show that there is no absolute time. That is absolutely contrary to our intuition, and it was absolutely disbelieved by the people in 1905 when Albert Einstein first proposed it. Nevertheless, it was correct, and we learned immense things from it, one of which is E is equal to mc squared, and it would not be published today, a similarly radical new idea, precisely because it went against received opinion. The overwhelming consensus of the physicists in 1905 was time is absolute. Albert Einstein proved, no, it is not.
The perception of the public and the perception of the culture is that science and scientists are always objective. How does bias creep in to a scientist's perspective, and how does that impact their willingness to publish things that they might disagree with?
In order to be a successful scientist, you really have to push your own ideas. You have to find better arguments for it, and you have to do this over a long period of time. So scientists are naturally selected, if they're any good, to be pushers of a particular idea. Now, that's all well and good, provided you do not also give them the power to suppress any idea which is contrary to theirs. There is also a financial interest, because if you have built your entire reputation, which is to say your salary, on a particular idea being right, then if it's proven to be wrong, you're pretty well out of a job. So they are strongly motivated, therefore, for your financial reasons, to oppose any new idea which would undercut their own reputation and prestige.
One of the things that I saw that very much intrigued me on this subject was an email that you got regarding a possible publication of your paper on refereed journals. And there was a refusal to publish that paper based on an idea that you had within the paper. Could you describe that incident for us?
Yes, I thought it was amusing because I have actually been asked by two journals to publish that particular paper on refereed journals, but they both made it a condition that I delete all discussion of intelligent design. I thought rather favorably of intelligent design because I think that it is really just an automatic consequence of known physics, the physics that's in all the textbooks. However, that is not acceptable. The contrary view is dominant that intelligent design is, quote, nonsense, end quote. I strongly disagree. But they said that if you insist on publishing this without modification, we're just not going to publish the paper. Now, I thought it was really amusing in the first case I encountered this, and I countered with this particular referee report is a perfect example of what I am arguing against in my paper. I suggest, therefore, that we publish the paper as I have written it, and you publish the referee report that you've just sent me, and then I will publish a response to the referee report, and then either you or the referee can respond to my response, and we'll end it at that. And that way we'll let people make their own decisions about whether I am right about this particular issue, and they declined that too. They didn't want the readers of the journal to be exposed to the real idea. And anytime you express a controversial idea, and no question about it, intelligent design is controversial, you're not allowed to publish a strong defense in, quote, a reputable, end quote, journal.
Did anybody ever respond recognizing the irony of that situation?
They never did. They could not understand the irony, although I pointed it out, that it is so obvious to them that there can be no argument in favor of intelligent design that I could not reach them. They have locked into their minds the idea that evolution, which I will define as common descent, is entirely random and there is no God out there which could be directing the whole shebang. I like to put it this way, and I propose putting it this way, namely that Darwin said that God plays dice with the universe. Einstein said God does not play dice with the universe, and I am a physicist. I am in Einstein's camp. You have a choice, Darwin or Einstein. Me, once again, I'm with Einstein.
What could be some of the problems that science might face in the future due to an over-reliance on peer-reviewed journals as they currently exist?
Well, I think what will have to happen is that we will have to bypass the leading referee journals. I like referee journals because they do have an important role to play. And I submitted a paper a few years ago, and the referee caught an egregious error. I cannot understand how I made that mistake. I'm very thankful that he did, so I corrected the error in the paper. This happens. That's the usefulness of the referee journals. But increasingly, they are not being used to correct errors, as it was in my case. They just want to suppress any contrary view. What I think we'll have to do, and I think what we're doing, is going back to the rules of the golden age of physics in Germany, the 1920s. All sorts of breakthroughs were being made almost daily at that time in quantum physics and relativity. All of our current civilization, really, is based on the physics developed in the 1920s. That's sad, because we need new developments. We haven't gotten any in the last 25 to 30 years. A friend of mine, Lee Smolin, has written a book, The Trouble with Physics, pointing this out. There hasn't been any advance in physics in the last 30 years. I think one of the main causes of that is referee journals simply won't publish any new ideas. That if it doesn't agree with the prevailing consensus, forget it, Charlie. What we're having to do now increasingly is bypass the referee journals. Fortunately, the Internet has been invented, and there are journals, effectively, in physics, it's called the archive, that anybody can put a paper on that particular general database, and anybody can reference it. Some of my papers that I've had been very controversial. One of my papers is quantum non-locality does not exist, and I've been trying to get it published for something like 16 years. I've got members of the Royal Society agreeing with me that it's right and important. I've got members of the National Academy of Sciences agreeing with me it's right and important. I can't get it published. Again, I think that since I've gotten true peer reviews by some of the leading physicists in the world on this particular area, that it's right. But I can't get it through the anonymous referees. What I've done, of course, is put it on the Internet, and people can read the journal, read the paper, and decide for themselves. We've returned via the Internet to a situation, as I said, that existed in the 1920s in Germany. There was a leading physics journal, Zeitschrift für Physik, which basically would publish any article that was submitted by a member of the German Physical Society. That allowed, if you had a really radical idea, you could make sure that the article was published. Albert Einstein, by the way, was one of the leaders in Germany at the time, making sure that Zeitschrift für Physik stayed free. Albert Einstein correctly believed that science, physics in particular, depends on freedom of communication. One of the papers they had published in this time was Heisenberg's uncertainty principle idea, which got him the Nobel Prize and therefore was an important paper to publish. But the idea, once again, at the time was too contrary for the average person to accept. But at the time, you could still get your paper published. The great physicist Niels Bohr said, if you have a crazy idea, so crazy you are afraid to publish, well, you have no one to blame but yourself if someone else gets the idea too and publishes, therefore, the idea under his own name so that you get no credit. He could not say the same thing today, because if a person has the right idea and tries to get it published, it's no guarantee it will be published.
Do you expect ultimately the internet to take care of the problem itself?
We shall see. One of the problems with the internet, publishing it on the archive, is that one of the main sources of information, even from professionals like myself, is Wikipedia. If I want to know a new idea of some sort of concept, I will generally first check at Wikipedia. Wikipedia, however, will not reference any work that has not yet appeared in a refereed journal. Wikipedia, the idea simply doesn't exist unless it's been published in a leading journal. Also, Science Citation Index, which is another useful source of information on technical issues, won't publish any result that has not yet been appeared in referee journals. So, I simply don't know. I do know that my paper, which I mentioned on quantum non-locality, has never been published, but it still has gotten a lot of comment on the internet, and some people are building on it. So it has not entirely disappeared, even if it can't appear in a referee journal. The idea, however, would be a more easily transmitted to other people if it were allowed to appear in a referee journal. So I don't know which will win. I think that we would have lost entirely if it weren't for the internet.
Dr. Frank Tipler, thanks so much for making the time.
My pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed this podcast of ID the Future. If you'd like more information or to support the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.